There was a question at the end of the session this morning that came in the written form. There was a couple of questions. When I tried to answer, as I was answering a live question, and another one, I thought, oh, I'm going to come back to this later. So the question, I'll read it for you. The question is, what are the signs that we are making progress in this practice? I have been doing this for a long time, and I wonder frequently if I am any different from what I started. And you know, the first thing that came to my mind was, I think it was Martine Batchelor. She was saying, she's a really, really wise teacher, but also very funny in her character and delivery of the, it can be, I mean, it's not the only thing she does, but she has a lot of depth, but sometimes she really cracks me up. I remember she was describing, she was saying, often people say like, my practice doesn't work, you know, like there's something wrong with my practice, I'm not making any progress. And like I sit there and my mind is confused and agitated, you know, and I sit every day and I'm not making any progress. And she said, usually when I ask these people, you know, and in your life, like not on the cushion, but in your life better? Like is the Dharma or the practice helpful? Oh yeah, for sure, there's no doubt about this. And so when I read the question here about like, is my practice, you know, having any impact or the progress in my practice, this is what came to mind. And of course, other things came to mind. I actually decided to use the question as, the basis of this this sharing this afternoon. But just now, as I'm sitting here with, you know, ready to start sharing a bit, the same person said, I should clarify my question a bit. I can list many ways in which my time off the cushion is greatly more life-giving and less stressful. My question is really about my time on the cushion. I still struggle with drowsiness. I still have trouble concentrating. My busy mind is still busy, and so on and so on. So I'm wondering, how do you know if your actual time on the cushion is maturing? So I see there's another question here, but I'm going to read it only later. My mind is not so good. So anyway, I'm reading this to you because it makes me laugh, because the you know what I thought of Martine Batchelor and what this person is, the details they're adding seems to be really in line with this, is like, oh, it's not so satisfying to be on the cushion every day, but in life I can see many ways that my practice is having an impact, or, you know, improving my life and probably the life of the folks around me. And so that's what I was thinking about, you know, just a little earlier during the lunch break, I was thinking, oh, that's actually a good question. How do we know that we're making progress? It seems like it's a valid question. It's an invalid question is if we're always asking, you know, like if we're constantly asking, am I making progress now? Am I making progress now? You know, that's definitely a hindrance. But I think it makes sense to be able to gauge, you know, like, is there progress on this path? And so a bunch of things came to my mind, but the first thing that came to my mind was about, I don't know if it's a paradox, you'll see, but the first thing that came to my mind was like, how would one, you know, how do I know that I make progress on the path? Well, it's forgiveness and responsibility are the two things that came to my mind first. So being less harsh on myself, let's start with self, you know, being less harsh, less judgmental, less demanding of myself. And when I say myself, I'm thinking also of everybody I see in practice, I talk to, when people say, oh, my mind is still wandering, but I don't make a thing out of it anymore. And you might recognize this. And to me, this is not benign. You know, that's it's something very important, like to give oneself some loose, or maybe that's, you know, an expression or manifestation of kindness. So there's a simplification here. There's a practice of renunciation. We renounce making a story out of, yeah, of course, you know, the mind does that. On the cushion, you know, when we notice that the mind wanders, or, you know, all the different things that the mind can do, obsesses, gets lost, and things like this. But also in life, you know, kind of a deeper understanding that, of course, there's going to be several mistakes, you know. Of course, there has been mistakes that I've done through speech or actions, decisions that were lacking consideration, sometimes maybe for self, sometimes for others, you know. But the capacity to reflect on these and not turn this into self-hatred, I think that's a progress, a sign of progress on practice, that there's more kindness towards oneself. And at the same time, and that's the paradox that I seem to see in there, that at the same time, there's a really higher sense of responsibility. But it's wise. It's not a sense of responsibility that, you know, makes me fearful or guilty, or it's a sense, an understanding that actions, words have impact. Like a, you could, in classic Buddhist term, you would say karma, like a deeper understanding of karma, that the things I don't say have an impact. The things I say, you know, the things I do or don't do, that everything has an impact. And a lot of tenderness around this, a lot of responsibility, but not harshness. I don't know if I'm gonna find other words to describe it, but that's, I think, what I've seen develop in me, and definitely what I see, you know, as teachers, and Jeannie would attest to this. I think we have the amazing chance to talk about with people about their practice, you know, and hear about people's practice, and that's something that I've seen over the decades a lot, that people have more kindness towards themselves. More integrity, like we learn to live closer to our values. So when I read your kind of the details on your question, saying I can list many ways in which my time off the cushion is greatly more life-giving and less stressful. So life-giving, like life-giving, it seems like dana, it's generosity, huh? You say giving, and so it seems to me like your life, you live your life closer to your values and with more integrity, that your actions are in line with more in line with, you know, what you believe in, what you care for, etc. And I think that's what gets strengthened in, that's what we call vipassana. That could be a definition of vipassana, to see deeply what I'm moved by, what are my values, what is my inner ethics. And to have this be remembered, you know, accompany us, because we might have like think, oh, you know, I care about respect and honesty, and I care about, you know, considering others and stuff. But in action, sometimes it doesn't equate quite so much, especially when I'm triggered in some ways, you know, that I want something, or, you know, that my mind kind of shrinks a bit around something that I want or that I don't want, you know. And then respect, honesty, you know, they can be, you know, intermittent or, you know, out the window for a few minutes here and there. But I think that with practice, that's what I see in myself. And I understand this as a kind of protection, you know, a protection for myself and a protection for others, is this sati is sometimes translated as remembering, this capacity to remember our values. That's, I think, what mindfulness practice can do, is that we can remember our values as we go along the day, you know, in, you know, unexpected situation, undesired situation, still there's something. And the way, one of the ways that I've seen it happen or would describe it happening, is that with living, integrating, you know, more and more over the years, the decades, mindfulness, this quality of presence, it's almost as if time was slowing down a bit. We have time to see our intentions before we act or speech. Not all the time at all. It's a lot more messy than I'm describing. But I think, and that's a way we can see if our practice is making progress, I think, is that, you know, we can act more because time seems to slow down, or we can notice, you know, the noticing per minute I was talking about earlier. We can notice what's going on in this mind, you know, and what will our actions and, you know, speech, will, what it will be led by. Otherwise, we usually find out, you know, later when somebody tells us, or later when we're alone in bed, you know, like, oh, why did I say that? You know, and with practicing like this, at some point we see, so we can act in accordance with, you know, our deepest wisdom. And even, I think, when there is more presence, even kind of shaky wisdom, like things we just understood lately or not totally, or that we heard somebody say and it resonated as true and needed to be integrated. But when there's a certain quality of presence, even this that is shaky can be acted on, or can be, you know, brought in the reflection that we're, our thinking process. So am I living closer to my values, more with integrity, I think, is one thing that, yeah, that could help us see if practice is unfolding well. I think in terms of triggers or afflictive emotions, or kind of detrimental habits of mind, tendencies of mind that we have, maybe over time we see that they don't last as long, you know, that we can recognize what's going on instead of being duped by. If you remember this morning when I was talking about afflictive emotion, either fooled by, you know, in belief of the emotion, or not wanting the emotion, and being aware, I think the becoming aware of what's going on in the heart is, you know, is this capacity is developed so that we can recognize maybe a little bit more quickly. Or if we don't recognize it, if somebody else recognizes it for us and names it, like there's a chance we'll be able to hear what they say instead of being denial. Like, no, I'm not angry. No, not at all. If somebody said, oh, Pascal, I think you're angry. I'm like, let me check. actually, you might be right. like there's, you know, honesty also picks up a bit, you know, the capacity to be honest with oneself. It's very uneven, this development, and it's remains maybe shaky and a little messy, but still there might be like something we can recognize. For sure, when we're practicing Vipassana, and it's not a free ride, you know, it's important to say that it's not easy, this practice. We don't have to, you know, like become exhausted practicing it, you know, like it's very kind of delicate and step by step, but it requires a lot of us, you know, like it's not like I want it, it should be there now, you know, it's a lot of I remember a good friend, acquaintance, practitioner was describing me having a conversation with Eugenia. I've told this story a few times because I thought it was, and now it comes to mind because I think it's in line with what I'm trying to describe. So this person has a little sailboat by the sea in Washington State, and Eugenia, a teacher, was coming to teach in the area, and he was coming maybe 2 days before the retreat started, and the organizers of the retreat said, you know, we would like to invite him, the teacher, the master, the Burmese master, to do something maybe kind of fun, or and it's too, you know. And so they said to this man, you have this sailboat, if he was interested, would you take him for a ride on the sailboat? And so they asked Eugenia, you know, in the 2 days before the retreat, would you like to go on the sailboat? And so the master said, yeah, I'd love to. So this man was telling me, you know, I had the chance to spend the whole day on the sailboat with Eugenia. And he said, I was really happy to tell him that I was doing an hour of sitting in the morning and an hour of sitting at night, you know, that I had managed to establish maybe for a year, a strong practice, you know. And when I told this to Eugenia, he went like this. And he said, you're going to have to practice every time all the time you're awake, you know, from morning to night. And he said, when he said that, my heart sank, you know, like, oh, I thought I was so proud I had achieved something. And he was telling me, no. But he said also, like, I reflected on this and it was a really good thing that he said it, you know, and there was a sense of like, yeah, okay, I'm taking this on. This is a lifestyle, you know, and I'm ready to take this on. So put it at the forefront as a great, you know, the greatest value, this quality of, what is the quality of my presence here? Am I habitual? Am I, you know, is this presence a little bit more full? Could it be, you know? And you were saying that he was, you know, trying to apply this in his life. And yeah, so I think that something like this is required of us. And it seems expensive. It seems like it's a lot. Yet, I think that when the mind or heart opens, you know, when we have, you know, when we, you know, when there's inside more wisdom, like we look back and we think, oh my God, this is not costly at all. This was really cheap for the quality of what I'm getting, you know, for the quality of, it's definitely worth putting a lot into it. And some of the classic things that, you know, you've heard maybe all of you or many of you have heard and know, you know, the classic insights, it's true. It can be a way to question, you know, how is my practice unfolding? I mean, it's all up to debate, you know, but I'm responding from my location here. But I do think that, you know, a question would be, has my awareness of ephemerality of phenomena increased? You know, am I more aware of the arising and passing nature of pretty much everything? Like, is that something I do notice? Is that something I'm aware of in my life? Is that part of how I perceive life? Because, yeah, some of my peace of mind or freedom is definitely related to that kind of understanding. And, you know, I was reading just a couple of days ago, I think, Bhikkhu Anālayo, and I wrote it in my little notebook. I don't often take notes, but I wrote this one with underline. And I think he was saying, whatever is experienced is a manifestation of change. Whatever is experienced is change. Is change taking the form of an emotion, a thought, a situation? And when I read this, I was like, oh my God, Pascal, it's even more thorough than you think. It's even more. And you know, it sounded really true, but I would not have thought about it in this way. You know, like it was kicking my butt a bit, you know, further along the path. You know, and I'll read it again because I think it's important. Whatever is experienced is a manifestation of change. And if we were to understand this really deeply, how could we cling to stuff, you know? How could we like want to keep, if we understood deeply that what arises is an event, you know? Is not something I can keep. It's something that comes together, kind of meteorology, and passes. Youth, health, relationships, absence of pandemics, you know, the solitude, the despair, the joy, the elation, you know, if we understood, if it was in our perception, if we could only perceive it through the lens of anicca, the word in Pali, impermanence, what impact would it have? Well, the mind would release its hold on the event or phenomena, because it would know deeply that this is arising. It would not fear losing it. It would know that it would lose it, you know? It would know that it would come to pass. So that kind of wisdom. So how can we see if there's progress on the path? Well, one way I would think of it is, do you perceive ephemerality in situation? Are you aware as things are happening that they're appearances, in the sense of they're appearing? It's not easy to see this. Although it's, if I believe Anālayo here, and I do, you know, it's only what it's made of, change. Although it's like its main, the main thing it's composed of is change, you know. It's really hard to see this. We solidify, we make things permanent and mine, and we want to stabilize this or that, you know, keep, hold, make permanent or sure, or, you know. And what would it be if we if we had that vision, that's wise view. But ultimately, it's not the ultimate question, because in a way you could say, I don't mind if you don't see change. The real test is, are you able to experience all these phenomena that come in and out of your life, you know, without the mind contracting, without clinging? You know, it's all about that, clinging and non-clinging. The perception of impermanence, you know, refining that perception of impermanence is only in the service of non-clinging. And that's the practice we do here. What's the practice here? The practice is to stabilize the mind, to stabilize the attention. Hold on. Event happening here. Or not. So what we're doing here is we're trying to create a mind, an attention of quality that can land on phenomena and stay there, so it can see it transform. Everything we're doing is for the mind to notice change. So we're trying really hard to get the mind out of its tendency to be obsessed with what it wants and what it prefers and what it should have happened and what will happen and all these obsessions. And we're like, yes, yes, we're going to put this aside because there's something we could see that would be so liberating. And we're like, yeah, but no, because later, you know, when opinions and we're all fascinated by all these things, you know. Like kids playing with dolls in a house on fire, you know. No, I want to be. Leave the dolls, love. the two of you, leave the dolls. We're going to get out of the house now, you know. And so we're trying to lose, renounce, abandon, lose fascination for all the stories that we tell, you know, so that we can have a little bit of space to actually feel and see and be with phenomena, with some kind of quality mind that will very, will notice if the mind has some quality to it. We're able to stabilize it a little bit, not, you know, have it abandon all the thoughts of preferences and speculation and rehashing. If it can let go of this for a moment and really look at what's happening, it will see arising and passing. It will notice this. It will notice this in thoughts, in emotions, in experiences of the body. It will start to notice it everywhere. And slowly, slowly, the perceptions will change. Like, hey, there was something going on. I was not aware of this, but things change. Everything I've been looking at in the last few months of practice, you know, have been arising and passing, arising and passing. Well, that is very meaningful, because the mind will maybe, yeah, gain access to some kind of joy. Because, you know, how many times did I hear Joseph say, empty phenomena rolling on, empty phenomena rolling on. Things appear mirage-like, bubble-like, magic show-like, appearances. They really appear and then disappear. Opinions do that. You know, the projection that creates the fear, you know, do that. Oh, this will turn bad. Appearance. It appears like this. It appears like it doesn't make sense. Then suddenly, whoops, oh, it makes sense now. I understand. You know, perceptions do that. The way we perceive things, they appear like this. Like, you know, you might have thought, it appears like a good idea to do this retreat. And now you're sitting here like, well, suddenly it appears differently. Yes, beautiful. I'm happy it appears differently now because you can see the underlying pattern is what? Is that it's changing. It's changing. And so when we're able to see this, it's amazing just to discover this in body. That's already mind-blowing. You think, well, this is my body. This is solid, permanent. This is my body. It's, you know, it's solid. Stop with your ephemeral appearance, mirage, bubble-like, you know. And then we sit and we really pay attention, not about the judgments and opinions about the body. Oh, it's too like this. It's not enough like that. It should, you know, not improving the body. Oh, I should improve my posture. And not this, just the experience, bare, just enough awareness to be with the body and stay with it. And then we start seeing flickering. Oh, it wasn't there for the last 10 minutes because I was thinking about something of the past. And the body was totally out of the experience. The toes flash in and out, the breath flashes in and out. You know, it's totally flickering. That is a change of view. To start to notice how ephemeral, it's not just ephemeral because it's going to live 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 80, 90, 100 years. It's even ephemeral during the day. We start to notice this with the body, and then we notice this with the environment. We just sit here, and a sound appears from the street and disappears. And it's cold suddenly because of sun and conditions, whatever, suddenly it's warm. And like today here, it's, you could say, one of the first days of spring. I was just outside before this talk for a few seconds. I went on my balcony. All the birds are coming by and all the people are on the streets. All my neighbors are, they're all in awe. Everybody's like looking around, you know, like, oh my God, the winter did finish, you know. We've been there for decades. Winter always ends up finishing, but, you know, it's still very surprising, you know. And yet, you know, even winter, while it's there, it keeps flickering in and out of the mind. It's not always there because sometimes it's just, how am I going to cook this thing? You know, winter is gone. You know, so we start to see the flickering nature of things in the body. We start to see the flickering nature of things in the environment. You know, now what is appearing? I so don't wish it on the western part of Canada, but here, at least, I don't know for you, but they're starting to talk about the third wave. Look at what's appearing. This was not in my mind. That was not my plan. My plan was vaccination out, you know? And now it's like, hey, whatever you conceived of the future, it's otherwise. And will there be a third wave? I don't know. You know, I've watched enough now to know that we can't know. It's impossible. And whatever is there, you know, it's going to change. The perception of it is going to change. Oh, it wasn't as bad as I thought. It was much worse than I thought. You know, I thought I wouldn't get it. I did. I thought they would get it. They didn't. You know, like, the perception's always changing. So we see this with the body, we see this with the environment, how it appears, the future, how it appears one day, depending on the mood, and another day, how the past appears. This is intriguing, no? You would think the past is the past. Yet, you know, something terrible, sometimes you give it a few days and it's laughable. You know, or something you think was the worst, you discover, well, it was, but also it gave me something that nothing else could have given me, maybe. And then we discover our own mind. and talk about flickering, talk about fluctuations. You know, it's agitated, suddenly it's calm. It's open, suddenly it's not anymore. You know, it has goodwill, suddenly it doesn't, or it doesn't, and a little later it does again, you know, have goodwill. So, you know, are we able to dwell with the different appearances without contracting around? Not easy, not easy. If you do contract around phenomena, I would say it's very natural, very normal. Makes sense that you would, or I would, or we would, you know. But are we slowly gaining, at least in some areas of our life, the capacity to allow, you know, for imperfection, discomfort, you know, not having what we want? You know, that's the freedom the Buddha talks about, the freedom that is unconditional. And the insight into impermanence, it's not like the one insight, it's the recurring, regular meeting, hanging out, being interested by impermanence, developing this. It says in the teaching that it helps a lot. You know, free the mind from contraction or clinging. And if I go further, or is it the way to say it? You know, the flickering nature of self. How dare you? You're not going there today. You're not going to touch this, you know? Well, practice goes that far as seeing that construction, how it's impermanent, how it's flickering, how it's ephemeral, how it appears in a way like this and later like that. And this is that's another one, another insight. Have we questioned this, what we call self, you know? Have we questioned that? Have we investigated that? Or does it seem very solid and permanent to us? Are we able to see how it appears and disappears, or morphs, or, you know, how we define ourselves with this and later with that, you know, an opinion, a sensation, how the mind, you know, we clings to event as I or mine? That is deep shit. That's deep stuff. Well, and it's possible to question this. It's possible to question this. And questioning this is definitely related to freedom. You know? Because the fear that comes with the strong belief in the permanent self, this is very scary. If we adhere to the notion of a permanent solid self, it's very scary because we don't know what's coming for this one, you know. And how amazing that practice can untangle that tangle. Amazing. Deep bows to the Buddha, really, for this one. Oh my God. That he could develop a kind of method or technique, if we reduce it to that, to for a few moments here to deconstruct that sense or that perception or that idea that we so are so fascinated by and enamored by. Wow. That's a big one. And yeah, yes, so many tricks to help us. Tricks, I say that in the best way. You know? Maybe I'll change that word later. But yeah, there's so many ways to help us do this. And one of the ways, one of the many ways, or a few of the many ways, one of them is, this not noticing moments of awareness, moments of consciousness. So we're sitting here, like now, let's take now, why take something else? So like now, you know, there's something hearing the voice and the ideas, huh? There's some consciousness of sound and consciousness of meaning, yeah? It's happening. And this is just, it appears and dissipates, it's ephemeral. Later it'll be consciousness of cutting the carrots. How amazing. This moment will have disappeared. Actually, it has. The one where I was talking a few seconds ago has died, has vanished. How amazing. And so we're invited in practice to actually tune in at that level. Of course, if I'm at the level that I want this, will I get that? You know, like now I'm in that reality, you know, I'm in the story, in the fiction. So there's not going to be any insight there, and that's not possible. But if we are able to tune in experience as we sit or walk, you know, it'll start to become obvious that the one that was there at the beginning of the walking path, that experience that was there has died. And now there's another experience of standing at the end of a walking path. And then suddenly there will be the experience of sitting here. And over time we'll notice, oh my God, there's been so many deaths. Very natural. Nothing problematic with this. There was an eye there and it disappeared, it died, and there was an eye over there, and now there's an eye here, and it dies, and there's going to be another one later. Moments of knowing, moments of consciousness arise and die. So in there there's a, you know, what it could lead to is equanimity, like a balanced mind. That is not so, oh my God, what's going to happen to me? Like it says, oh, of course, it appears and disappears all the time. Or maybe it leads to joy. I think to me, that's a lot of what it does. Wow, how amazing. Especially joy at becoming aware that I was misled or mistaken. Oh my God, I had so much investment in I, you know, and it's doesn't really exist in this way, you know? In this permanent, solid, over decades way, you know? Anyway, playing with this can really... So I'm going far with your question, but you know, why not tell it like it is? You know, as a teacher, when I do talk with people that, you know, that these are things, I'm not judging or anything, but these are things, and of course, I don't even expect this, but when somebody has insight into this, I'm like, oh, okay, they've really put in the time here, you know, because that's not easy to entangle, and that they can see a little bit through the cloth here. You know, that they've made a few little punctures in the cloth is quite remarkable. And it's possible. So in a way, everything that I'm talking about, I think has to do with, and maybe I'll finish with this idea, has to do with everything of the wisdom and progress on the path and peace of mind or freedom, awakening, or living a better life, you know, more well-being in some ways, I think has to do with the relationship with what's happening. Not the thing that is happening, but the relationship to what's happening. And Alayo here again, and maybe partly in his word, partly in mine, because when I take notes, I'm not 100% faithful. I mean, the spirit, yes, but the letter, no. Not clinging to anything in the world means not clinging to anything in the world of experiences. Not clinging to anything in the world of experiences. What really counts is not special experiences. No matter how profound they may seem, what counts is the degree to which we can dwell without clinging to anything. So the mind not contracting around anything. And in the words of Joseph, that I love, and I think he loves that, he loves to say that because I think it's the syntax is not correct in English. But it's not you, it's not me who's going to tell you because it's not my first language. But I think what he says is, it doesn't matter what you don't cling to. It doesn't matter what you don't cling to. What matters is that you don't cling. Not clinging is not easy. And insights helps us do this. So understanding more and more deeply that things appear, they appear in the sense of time, you know, they appear and will disappear, and they appear in the sense of appearances. They appear like this. Somebody asks the Buddha, is it like this? And the Buddha answers, however you will conceive it, honey, it's different. However you will conceive it, it's different. Recognizing that conception itself is a layer, you know, it's an interpretation, it's something else than the thing itself. And so not clinging is partly recognizing that things are appearance in the sense that they appear and will disappear, you know. And appearance also in the sense that they look a certain way, they're perceived in this way, but they might not be exactly that. They might be something else because our culture, our history makes us get really involved with objects. We don't see them exactly as they are. We see them as we interpret them to be. This is really desirable. If I can get this, I'll be really happy and I won't ask anything for the rest of my life. And then you get it like, okay, I got it now. What I would like is a little improvement or something else altogether in the end. It's not that satisfying. And so to know the impermanent nature, the appearance-like nature of phenomena has a way to release the heart, so that it can allow appearances to be what they are, appearances, you know. And so something that appears and will disappear, something that looks a certain way and might be a little different if we stay around or later it might be understood differently. Wow. This is a very dynamic world in which we live, huh? We would like things to be like this, and this is how it is, and it's like this. And you're like, oh my God. Everything I'm seeing through the filters of my culture, of my maybe gender, or the way I've been genderly socialized, or so many layers, my wants, you know, my desire for satisfaction makes me project satisfaction on things, you know. My fear of things make me project on them worse than they are, maybe. Biases that creates all these inequalities in societies and all this. And so seeing through this can be very, very liberating. You know, how things are perceived as me, mine. And some of the spiritualities tell us, no, it's just like something you formed in your mind, some kind of representation, image, like very small. Now you're stuck with it. You don't know what to do with it. You're trying to improve that little self that you created, you know. Let's question the whole thing. Not easy. Well, I don't know if I helped things along or created more confusion, but these definitely were a few ideas around the Dharma, and I see now it's time to wrap this up a bit. So let's sit for a moment and see how you are with this, how you're able to not cling to anything in the world, not even, you know, whatever you feel here. Might be confusion. Can it be okay that not everything is resolved or clear? It doesn't matter what we don't cling to. We don't want to cling to clarity or to confusion. Is it possible to care about what's happening without contracting around it? So it's all about the relationship we have with what's happening. We recognize that it's there. That it appears like this right now. Can we engage with whatever is there in the relationship, in the heart, in society? Can we engage with it? With care. Without contracting. May we all gain insight into the fragility of everything, the ephemerality of everything. May we gain insight into this and may we respond well, wisely, so that we can protect our own mind and heart and protect the whole of life. Thank you so much for allowing this to be what it was and taking care of your own heart and mind in relationship to what's happening here today in your life, in the community's life. And see if you want to keep the pace a little slower, And just notice, you might notice things appearing, touches, tastes, smells, lights appear and disappear. If we slow down enough and pay enough attention, we'll see a lot of things flickering by, ideas, emotions, sensations, recognizing the dynamic nature of this world. Okay.